Hey friends, welcome to today's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. Have you ever been injured? Maybe you broke a bone, or maybe you had a shoulder or a back injury that was just like nagging at you and you didn't listen to it, and then you still didn't listen to it, and you fast forward months or maybe even years later and it's turned into a bigger issue. Well, today we're going to talk about injury prevention, not just how to prevent injury, but really more so this overarching picture of why is it so important to rest and recover? And what can I do? Maybe if you've experienced and you've had a diagnosis, or you know, you've been given some sort of information from a doctor or healthcare professional that maybe you don't see eye to eye with the diagnosis or with the treatment plan. And I really hope that today's episode empowers you to remember that you are your own advocate. And there are many opinions out there, and don't be afraid to ask for those opinions, to seek other opinions, because remember, you are the expert at your own body. You know your body, you know your journey. I mean, you know it best. And so never taking no or, you know, one certain answer as an end all be all. Today, I had the pleasure of interviewing athletic trainer and fitness professional Lisa Collins. She's actually a certified athletic trainer with over 25 years of experience in the health and fitness industry. She specializes in the care, prevention, and rehabilitation of injuries and special conditions. Now, what's fun about Lisa is that we actually connected through the Marketing Impact Academy. You guys have heard me talk about that academy before. It was created by Shalene Johnson. She is the creator of TurboKick, TurboJam, Pyo, all those workouts that I love to take and teach. And we actually connected through that space. And so it's amazing to me continually just the power of podcasting, the power of social media, how it can bring together so many people who we need to share each other's message. We need to learn from each other's stories. And so I will link in the show notes that the Marketing Impact Academy will be going live again to join. If you have ever had the entrepreneur itch, maybe you've thought about starting your own business, or you just want to test the waters, get on that wait list. I will be sharing once registration for that goes live. I don't have the dates specifically yet, but I can guarantee you that it will be sometime this fall. So if that's on your radar, jump on that wait list so that you get notified once it goes live. And without further ado, I introduce to you Polka Dot Mama Fitness. And y'all, you got to stay tuned to the sweetest story behind her name. And she shares that with us at the end of the show. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is fun.
So Lisa, for our listeners, Lisa and I connected through, you guys have heard me talk about the Marketing Impact Academy. It's a course that Shalene Johnson put out. And Lisa is a fellow fitness professional who really specializes in injury. And we're going to talk about not just injury today, but really this mindset around, you know, all or nothing mindset, how it translates to diet, but also to fitness. So tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, how you became an athletic trainer and what really led you to start your own business.
Yeah. So I am 41 and I've been married to my husband, Adam, for it'll be 20 years this year, which is crazy. It's also been 20 years since I graduated college and I really don't feel that old. I have three girls that are 14, 11, and 5. I am becoming the parent of a high schooler this year, so I'm also freaking out about that. And so, but I have officially been in the health and fitness business for 26 years. I started in high school as a swim coach and a gymnastics coach and a swim team instructor. And so right into college, athletic training caught my eye just because I like being in the athletic field. I am naturally athletic, but I'm not like really talented. Mm-hmm. So I could be in the athletic field and have that sense of community. And so athletic training caught my eye. And it, for those who don't know what an athletic trainer is, we're involved in care, prevention, and rehabilitation of athletic injuries. It requires a bachelor's degree and a board certification. And a lot of athletic trainers work on the college level, high schools, physical therapist office. I think they're most well known at professional sports. I always tell people, I'm that person that runs out on the football field with a fanny pack and khakis on and a polo shirt when somebody gets hurt. Like, I'm the little teeny tiny person that you see out there, because you got these massive football players and like this little athletic trainer. But I fell into athletic training because I really wanted to be a doctor. And I found out my sophomore year in college that it actually looks better when you're applying to medical school to not have a biology degree. So I started looking around and realizing they like you to be diversified. And so even though health and human performance and athletic training was not that far off of biology, it was far enough. And it required at the time 1,500 internship hours in order to even take the test. And that looked great on a medical college application. And so that's how dietetics
is that same way, of that long internship that I think, yeah, a lot of people don't realize.
No.
All the training you actually have to go through.
Yeah. Yeah. I spent a lot of time watching a lot of sports and taping a lot of angles. So yeah, I can do it under 2 minutes and fast.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's how I fell into it. But then I loved it. And I thought, why continue when I can do everything that I want to do right here? And so I got my board certification and just kind of went into the field.
I love that. Love that. It's definitely a unique angle. You know, we've had sports dietitians on here and personal trainers, but I love kind of that combination of athletic / medical, right? Coming together where you're really highly trained, doing a lot more, you know, actual, you know, as a personal trainer, you're not necessarily rehabilitating people, mm-hmm, and hands-on, right? Necessarily. So explain to us the difference a little bit more between, right? Of course, education, but a little bit of the day-to-day from an athletic trainer to a personal trainer, because you do both. Mm-hmm. And how do those two kind of integrate?
Yeah. I do both. And a lot of trainers do that because athletic training hours are terrible. Because oftentimes you're working when the teams are practicing. So you're on the practice field, making sure that nobody gets hurt, making sure that they are hydrated. You're there before they show up. You're there after they leave. So, and that's the same in the physical therapist office. The physical therapist office often tells you, these are the modalities that I want you to do. And then the athletic trainer is who goes and does it. So we're the actual hands and feet of the rehab in a physical therapist's office. And we're the first responders at a college or high school or professional team. So it's a wide range. So the main difference, honestly, is like we are trained in everything that a personal trainer does, but we also are a first responder. And we know how emergency care, and we know a lot more specifics about muscles, how they connect, how they move, how they're supposed to be balanced, and then how to rehabilitate. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And for the listener, you know, to become a personal trainer, you literally have to buy a textbook, study, and pass your test. And not to undermine personal trainers at all, but the barrier to entry, I guess you could say, is a lot lower than somebody with an actual degree. So there's a lot of crossover, but totally different at the same time.
Totally different. I think what people connect more with athletic training is nursing. So we have a similar amount of education and internship and difficult board certification as a nursing degree. We're just not as well known. And so more and more we are, because it's becoming a more common profession. But yeah, like I tell people, I have about as much education as a nurse does. It's just in a different specific field.
I love that. That's a great comparison. And I think part of the reason why maybe your field is becoming more known, right, is we are finally, slowly, but very surely, I feel that we're creeping more towards preventative care. And how can we prevent injury, prevent illness, prevent disease, versus how can we just treat it with another drug or Band-Aid approach?
Yeah. That's exactly right. There's so many things about athletic training that I wish the population knew, because just like I can help prevent an athlete from getting injured on the field, this exact same thing for Sally, who's going to the grocery store on a Saturday, mm-hmm. you know, like they translate perfectly, or Jim, who's going to the gym, you know? And so all of that information would be so beneficial in the general public.
Right. I talk about this to my clients all the time is that, you know, almost having this athlete's mindset because they're still humans. And we had a gal on the podcast a couple of weeks ago who she's a full-time professor, right? Has a, you know, full-time career, but on the side it trains for Ironman, right? Like, oh my gosh. She's an athlete, right? And yeah. maybe you're not quite at the extent of training for Ironman or you're not competitively athletic, but if you are moving on a day-to-day, right, whether it's exercise or just movement, you can benefit from so much of this. So tell us, you know, you work with a wide variety of people. So at what point do people come to you? Do you work with mostly women, mostly men? What age range? Mm-hmm. And what are kind of, what's the point that they get to you where they really need help?
Yeah. So a lot of times there has to be a pain point. I think that's in every situation, there has to be a pain point. And that can be a variety of reasons. Weight loss is always one, you know, it's just kind of, I get a lot of people, they want to lose weight and they're completely unaware of all the other aspects in their life that really need to come first. I call them the foundations. So that is a huge pain point. And then I do get a lot of people who have been given a diagnosis and have been told, you know, this is what your life's going to look like because of your diagnosis. And they have hope that that's not true. And so I built up enough of a reputation now that people kind of know that I work with special conditions. So they'll come to me and be like, is this a condition that you can help with? And I'm happy to help with it. I do actually prefer those because I feel like their start point is a little bit different mm-hmm. with weight loss. I have to kind of let them know like, hey, you came in to lose 100 pounds because your knees hurt and your hips hurt and your back hurts. I'm looking at you and I'm seeing that your posture is bad and this is bad and this, and that weight will help with that. But if we don't correct those things, then you're still going to have pain.
Yeah, absolutely. And I take that same approach with food, right? It's mm-hmm. a lot of, because like you said, I think it's the pain point. It's that point from their perspective that they feel like something has to change, right? And maybe right. it's been a doctor, maybe it's been friends or family who've said, well, that's the thing you have to change, right? But from you and I, as professional standpoint, we take a look back and like you said, the foundations, we go, that may be a byproduct of what we do, but it's not what we're going to focus on. So I'm interested to hear what are some of the specific conditions that, you know, people have come to you where they've got, they've said, I've got this diagnosis and my doctor said, or what are the things that their doctor said and what are those specifics?
So for a long time, it was fibromyalgia, multiple sclerosis, strokes, back problems. Those were like the tops, rotator cuff syndrome. And oftentimes they were told, especially with fibromyalgia, like you can't exercise, you can't lift weights. That's come a long way because we're talking about 15 years ago is when I really started working a lot with fibromyalgia. Now it's Lyme disease. That is a huge one. I get a lot of Lyme disease diagnosis, which thankfully most doctors are telling Lyme disease people that they can exercise and they should exercise, but they need to know how to do it right. So that's a huge, I'm seeing some transition in the medical field of them not always throwing that pat, like you can't do anything. However, I do consistently see that the medical profession saying like, you can only do this much. And I believe that they can do more than that. And often this much is like barely functional. And I personally believe that we can get you to comfortably functional or beyond, depending on what your goals are. I think we could get everybody to an athletic level. It might not look like LeBron James, but it might not look like me, but it will work for you and it'll make your quality of life better.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to go back to Lyme disease. I actually heard something on the news recently about how there's, I think, I can't remember what the statistic is. Someone needs to fact check me, but like 10 times the amount of ticks out this year. I'm sure it depends where you live, but that Lyme disease is becoming more and more prevalent. So explain, you know, like the MS and Lyme disease and stroke, what are some of the signs and symptoms that these patients are experiencing that they feel so hopeless?
Yeah. So fatigue is a big one across the board on all three of those. They're very fatigued, which can be mentally and emotionally exhausting, not just physically exhausting. All three of those have musculoskeletal pain. So muscle, bone, joints, ligaments. Lyme disease is characterized by some tightening. So is MS, like you lose muscular function. Actually, all of the above.
Yeah.
There's some tightening. And so there's this feeling like I can't do it because I'm already in so much pain and I'm already so tired and I just don't have the energy. And it's discouraging. And so it becomes a mental battle because they just can't get there. And in reality, starting a little bit will improve. It will improve your energy levels. It will improve your mobility. But, you know, a lot of times they can't get out of bed. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of find a way to integrate it in slowly but surely until you get that momentum going.
It sounds almost like an oxymoron or, you know, mm-hmm. counterintuitive. It's like, move and you'll have more energy, but I don't have energy, right? And so it's like helping them to break that cycle. And I love how you bring up the emotional fatigue. Last week, I recorded an episode talking about like therapy, right? And this mindset. Mm-hmm. And it's like, let's stop saying that physical and mental, you know, stop separating so much, right? Because, you know, when you get a patient or a client, yes, there is emotional fatigue. Mm-hmm. And how are you supposed to make progress with somebody when that's their belief? And then that belief is being reinforced by a health professional who's saying, yep, you're right. You are fatigued. You are tired. You can't do X, Y, Z. So what are some of the ways that you even start with somebody who comes to you in this place where they almost feel so hopeless?
Yeah. It is a challenge because I specialize in the exercise part of it. And that is really like a sports psychology part. I have a good friend who's a sports psychologist in Oregon. And so apart from encouraging people to go see a therapist, which is one of the things I do, I'm like all hands on deck when it comes to these kind of things. I'm like, you're going to need a chiropractor. You're going to need a therapist. You're going to need a naturopath. You're going to need me. And we're going to figure out a way to make that all work because I feel like it's a team sport, especially when you're in that mental place where it's just, it's scary. It's really scary. And you're looking ahead. A lot of these people are young, you know, 20s and 30s are getting these diagnoses and they're thinking like, how am I going to live like this for the rest of my life? Mm-hmm. And so getting that hope really anchored into their soul, like there is a potential. And then really quickly, you have to give them some little wins. So that's where I give them an exercise program that's not going to make them sore. And it seems ridiculously easy. And so a lot of times they look at me like, really, this is it? I'm like, no, this is where we're starting. Because if you get sore, you're going to associate soreness with pain and you're going to quit. And so, and that's a trick as a trainer to work them enough to build stuff, but not so much to make them like debilitatingly sore. Cause that is, those conditions have a propensity for being extremely sore. So those like big crazy workouts that you see people do that I'll do a crazy Chalene workout, like turbo fire workout. It would kill them. Like that is not where you start.
Right. I love that you focus on small wins because we talk about that same aspect with dieting too. Right. And I think for our listeners, that should be a red flag when you're working with any sort of health professional who wants to take on the roles of a trainer, of a psychologist, right? And they tell you that they can solve all your problems.
Yeah.
Like if you're not sore, it doesn't count, right? I see that. You probably see that as well all the time in the industry of we equate if I didn't, you know, puke or if I wasn't able to walk the next day, well then what was the point? So how do you, let's say, so somebody gets these small wins. What are some of the signs, or so you're working with someone, right? What are the signs that you see that somebody is actually at risk for injury?
So that is, poor posture is the first one. Poor posture is the first one forever. We're all on screens, even
as
more
as I'm
now.
Slouched on this computer. Yeah, as we're all talking. Like,
poor posture is a huge one. And I can't tell you how many people, I have all these visuals running through my head right now of people coming in. I mean, we're talking like foot turned in, hip popped out, like hunched over. And they're like, I just need to lose weight. And I'm like, no, like I can like see all of these imbalances. And so poor posture is right at the top of the list. And that involves so many things. I can say poor posture, but I can also mean tight muscles, poor core strength, diminished mobility, and then usually underlying or overlooked pain. So that person that I described, she started limping with her toe in, and that popped her knee out, and that popped her hip out, which popped her backboard and shifted her shoulders. Well, she ignored the ankle, and then she ignored the knee, and then she ignored the hip, and then she ignored the back, and then she ignored the shoulders. She ignored all of it, and our body is designed to, you know, initially we feel pain, but our body's designed to survive. And so it will say like, well, she's not doing anything about this, so I guess we're going to stop telling her that she's in pain. And so it'll stop sending the signals, and so you'll stop being physically aware. It becomes this like white noise in the background, but it's always leading to something else. So usually there's like these layers of pain. And so they'll say, my pain is my shoulder. And you're like, well, yeah, of course, like you've got, you know, TV screen syndrome. But then you look at the rest of it and it's like, well, I think it actually started in your back, which started in your hip. And so you kind of have to like work your way back up and like, oh, my back never hurts. Well, then you like crack the shoulders, like my back hurts. You're like, I know, because that's where it started. So you kind of have to go play things backwards with posture. And we're just, as Americans, we're the worst. And I have like Ford neck syndrome, and I send people to chiropractors all the time. Again, my team. I can help you, but you need to go see a chiropractor too.
That's such an interesting perspective though, you know, when we're talking about weight loss, and particularly because we've been trained, I think, as a society to just assume, and we bear, I think, as the patient, as the client, but sometimes even professionals, like if you have pain, well, if you're overweight, then it must be due to your weight. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah. So it's not always due to the weight. And oftentimes one of the reasons why people are overweight is because there was something that diminished their mobility. So they stopped moving as much, continued to eat the same amount of food or more. And so then the weight came on. And yes, that affects your muscles and joints. Absolutely. But it's not likely the source. Just like, I mean, if you talk to my sports psychologist friend, she would probably tell you that there's an underlying social emotional reason to why you're gaining weight as well. So it's very multifaceted.
Yeah. Yeah. Starting to look at the person as it's not as simple as lose weight and you won't have pain. There could be an emotional source. There could be a physical imbalance. And so if you can work with somebody who can assess you and really look at the bigger picture, makes such a huge difference. And so I think for our listeners, if anyone's listened to the previous episode we did on PCOS and, you know, some of these other conditions, same thing. If somebody gives you a hard and solid diagnosis, of course, trust professionals, but I think be cautiously optimistic, be curious, and don't accept, you know, no for an answer. So what advice do you have for someone who's been given a diagnosis where the doctor says they can't do or they shouldn't do X, Y, Z? How would you have that conversation with a health professional?
Yeah. So with a health professional or just with somebody who's...
Both.
Both. Okay. So if it's a person who has said, been given a diagnosis by a doctor and said, you can't do X, Y, Z, I always say, first of all, hold out hope and be your own advocate and get a second opinion. And I'm a huge, huge proponent of thinking outside the medical box. So I 100% have respect for medical doctors, and I always start down that route. That's where I always start. So, but start with, you know, if it's your primary care doctor, you need to remember that your primary care doctor knows a little bit about a lot of things. So it's a very wide and shallow understanding. So your specific issue, he or she may know just a little bit. So a specialist would be the next place to go and see what they're saying about your issue, because they have a deeper understanding. But even in that, so let's say you have a neurological issue, so you have a musculoskeletal issue. So a neurologist would say one thing, an orthopedic surgeon might say something else. And so you kind of have to get, hopefully you have insurance for this, but you have to get all of their opinions. My grandpa is a great example. He had some neck pain that was radiating, and his physical therapist, he's 93 now, but he was 80 at the time. And his personal doctor basically said, yeah, you're old. Like, you can't do anything about it. And I said, oh, I don't think so. Like, you haven't met my grandpa. We have to tell him not to mow his lawn. Aww. Like, please don't trim your own bushes. Like, we'll all come help you. And he's like, I got this. Like, he's just super energetic. And I was like, this is not your typical 80-year-old man. And so we got him in with a neurologist. We got him in with a physical therapist. Long story short, he's now pain-free, but the primary doctor was like, you're going to have pain for the rest of your life.
Pain-free in 93.
Like, yeah, pain-free in 93. Yeah.
That should be a tagline. Pain-free.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, he's going strong, man. And at 80, his primary care doctor was ready to give up on him because he had a little shallow information. He didn't have the depth of understanding. Mm-hmm. So, and I even say, like I mentioned, chiropractors, naturopathic doctors. My own personal story is I've been athletic my whole life, but after my third child, she didn't sleep. And so I had undiagnosed postpartum depression, which had a physical effect on my body. And I'm a diehard. So I'm the kind that would push through pain when you shouldn't. So when I'm preaching people not do that, I'm preaching to myself. So I'm not sleeping through the night. I'm getting maybe 4 hours, maybe five of interrupted sleep, training for a half marathon, running a half marathon, averaging less than a 10-minute mile, like just pushing. And I hit a wall and I went to my primary care and he was like, listen to my heart. And he's like, you seem healthy. He wasn't even going to like send me to a therapist or anything. And I was like, okay, but I feel like if I do a workout at this point, because I was so physically exhausted, that I will die. Like I literally felt like my heart was going to explode.
So fatigued. Yeah.
I was so fatigued. And so I just started going with every avenue that I could. I found a therapist. I went to a naturopathic medicine doctor. I ultimately found out that even though I was really healthy, because I wasn't sleeping and I was over-exercising, my body wasn't absorbing nutrients. And so I had this crazy nutrient deficiency, even though I was eating 5 servings of vegetables every day, 2 servings of fruit, 2 servings of carbs, 4 servings of protein. I knew exactly what I was eating. Crazy nutrient deficient. And so it took me probably 8 months to get through finding all of my team to get me to a place where I was going to be healthy. Because at the time I was 37, I was like, I'm not doing this. This is not going to be my life. This is not me. And so I knew that there was hope to like find myself again. I just had to take those steps. And you have to have support for that because sometimes you'll beat on a door and they're like, yeah, we'll see you in 2 months. And you're like, okay, but I need to see you right now. I need to be in your door right now. And actually people like me are a lot easier to get in with. And so I become the cheerleader a lot of times. I'm like, okay, I'm going to help you here. And I'm going to keep you accountable to make sure that you get the therapist, that you see the primary care, that you see the specialist, that you keep going.
Yeah. It's like putting all the puzzle pieces together, you know, and thank you for sharing your story because I think so many women can relate to that, to getting to a point where they just feel fatigued, right? And it's like, I just need help, but I don't know where to start. And I feel like nobody can help me, but remembering to be your own advocate. But so if you don't mind sharing kind of your own personal, how did you continue? I mean, you obviously were like, this is not how I'm feeling. This is not how I'm going to continue to live. But how did you stay persistent with kind of pursuing that help? Like when you do call and they're like, okay, 2 months, like that can feel very discouraging.
Yeah. So, I had a team. So I had, 2 people in particular that I knew had struggled with depression in the past. And so I let them know. I was like, this is what I'm struggling with. This is where I'm at mentally. And they were like, okay, you gotta have to find the right therapist. And so they were like my support team for finding the right therapist. Because the first person I went to was not the right one. And so I had to like keep working at it. So that was discouraging. But having that support system, so when I just needed to talk to somebody, I would call them. And then the same with the naturopathic doctor, she was booked out like 6 months, but you ask, do you have a wait list? And so I got myself on a wait list. And then about once a week I would call and be like, hey, any chance you have any cancellations this week? I'm very persistent, but
I'm
not the norm when it comes to persistency. And then I got in with a chiropractor right away and a massage therapist. And then I found a support group. So I had a great team of Beachbody team that does workouts, I just let them know. I don't encourage everybody telling all your business, but if you have trusted people that you can tell, you tell them. So I had like this group of five that were like my workout people. And then I had these two people that were my therapists. And then I had, you know, my persistency just with the naturopathic. And then I made friends with the people there. So then I think they got tired of me calling. And so it's, like, I think
fine,
they just
give her an appointment.
Yeah. I literally had a day where they called. They're like, somebody canceled at 2:00 and it was 1:00. And I was like, I'll be there. And I had my daughter with me. I called my mom. I'm like, I don't care where you are. You're taking her. I'm going to this appointment. And she knew, my parents knew what was going on. So like, yeah, we'll get you, we'll take care of it. So
I love that. And recognizing that it's okay to have kind of different buckets of support, right? Mm-hmm. Like people who can help you in different areas who, you know, will not only be your cheerleader, but I think have that safe space and check up on you, right? People who mm-hmm. you can talk to who understand how important this is to you, how big of an issue it is to you mm-hmm. and can hold you accountable in a supportive way. So that's, I love that, just hearing that, different ways to keep accountable to yourself and not lose hope.
Yeah. And it's hard. I have to say it's hard. That's, being vulnerable for me is really hard. I tend to be like the type A personality, like I got this. And so getting the therapist first was like the integral piece because that helped me to open up, and sleeping was actually the other thing. So I had to basically sit down with my husband and be like, I have to sleep. Like, I can't keep going like this. It was, that's a whole nother story about injury prevention. You will get injured if you aren't getting enough sleep. So, I needed sleep. And so I had to sit down with my husband and say, I need help. And thankfully it was shortly after that we discovered my daughter had some severe food allergies. And so once we cut those foods out, she slept through the night. So that was really helpful.
That was a helpful little small tip. Yeah.
Yeah. Where was this 2 years ago? But yeah, so that was, you have to get your spouse on board, and that can be intimidating, I think, for some people. To ask for help is very scary. Mm-hmm. And I think as women, a lot of times we talk ourselves out of the friendships that we really have. And that was something I was doing. I was like, I don't have support. And I just had to be like, too bad. I have to find it. You know, I have to take what I have in here, however imperfect that it is, and make it work. Mm-hmm. And so we have to change that like mental self-talk when it comes to support and friendships. Cause I think we, as women, we talk it down and we say it's not there when it really is. We just need to be vulnerable and give people an opportunity. And a lot of times they're so happy and they feel so honored that you trusted them with the information. And hopefully that trust will start being reciprocated. And I've built the best friendships out of me being vulnerable and saying, waving the red white flag and being like, I need help like right now.
Yeah, I can relate to that too. So I just shared last week, I actually went to therapy for the first time, and same thing. I had a friend who was the one who checked in on me. Hey, did you go yet? You mentioned that you were going to go, or that you've wanted to do this. How has that been? But recognizing too that it's important to have both, right? This support system from a family, friend, you know, even like acquaintance perspective, but also like the actual, you know, trained professionals to help you, right? Who to actually, you know, hold you accountable and make progress. I love how you mentioned to sleep, right? Because recognizing that whatever health struggle that you're struggling with, we can't ignore one area. Like we talk all about balance and, well, you know, I have to have everything in balance. And while I don't really believe that balance is 100% achievable, right? There's always an opportunity cost in some area, but we just can't tell ourselves, we can't trick our brains into believing that we're healthy and we're fine and clearly ignore, you know, this area that's suffering. Like in your case, sleep, right? Like you can feel like you have all the things in place, but if you're not getting enough sleep and you're not resting and taking care of, you know, the other aspects of health, your body will not let you forget it.
No, sleep and a rhythm of rest is another thing. So for the other end of the spectrum, like the overworkouters like me, kind of like, I'm fine. I got this. I got the balance. I got the core posture. I can just keep going.
Right.
But having a rhythm of regular rest And sometimes that means like not even an active rest day, you know, because mm-hmm. I've done the crazy workouts where your day off is still an active rest day, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but even incorporating in, if your tendency is more to be like super active, about every 8 weeks, you need to take a week off. And
I love that. Thank you for saying that. Everybody listening, you've heard it here from a professional.
Yeah.
You have permission to take a full week off.
A full week off. And I encourage, like, if you want to do a stroll, like I do a casual stroll by water because that's relaxing and refreshing to me. I don't do a brisk walk, right? But that's it, you know? And I think people don't realize, like, when you're exercising, you're breaking down the muscles. You're actually micro tearing your muscles all throughout. And so why you build muscle is because it builds it back stronger. They're like, if this crazy lady keeps it up, we need to be stronger. So they build your body builds it stronger. So that's the response. But at a certain point, your body just needs a week to fully heal. And I think it's actually kind of fun to either like do some sort of metric at the beginning of the week, like weigh yourself or do measurements and then do it at the end. Everybody's a little bit different, but my inches are always lower at the end of the week because there's so much inflammation from just being a person who works out consistently. There's always a level of inflammation in there. That week allows to flush it out, especially if I'm really refueling myself from a nutrition standpoint. Mm-hmm. So that week I usually pair with like, I'm just getting really nutrient dense foods. I'm getting carbs actually because I'm rebuilding muscle. I'm making sure I'm getting some balanced carbs in there. Lots of water, being hydrated is really important. And just having that be like my repair week, it makes all the difference in the world.
But recognizing that we need rest, we need recovery, and taking mm-hmm. time off and listening to your body, even for a week, you're not going to gain weight.
No.
It's not the day-to-day, week-to-week that matters so much. It's even looking at the bigger picture. So to kind of tie this all back together, why mm-hmm. is injury prevention so important? And, you know, what mm-hmm. does it mean to prevent injury?
Yeah.
From your words, like for the everyday exerciser.
Yeah. So I would say the reason you want to prevent it is that injury will steal your time and your energy. It will steal your mental, emotional, and physical energy. It usually takes an average of 6 to 8 weeks to fully recover from an injury, and that's a minor injury. And then
like what are some examples of like minor injuries?
Yeah. So a strain or a sprain would be like a minor injury, where you've either like torn a tendon or torn a ligament mm-hmm. or, you know, thrown out your back. Those would be more minor injuries. But it does, it takes 6 to 8 weeks to recover from that. And then overuse injuries. So if you get a stress fracture in your foot or plantar fasciitis, you're looking at 3 to 6 months sometimes, if not longer, to recover from that kind of a thing. And so it's really, it steals your time and your energy, and it kills momentum. And so it's really something that if you can prevent it, you want to prevent it. I fell off my bike. I told my chiropractor this, and he's like, when you were a kid, right? I was like, no, yesterday. I fell off my bike yesterday. And I did like the Superman off of my bike. I just was doing a turn and I just hit some gravel and I went over my bike and I hit my chin on it. Ouch. It took me, so this was like not really preventable. I wasn't even going that fast. I would just hit the gravel. It was an accident, right? Had my helmet on. In Arizona, you don't have to have your helmet on, but you know.
Oh my goodness. I used to be so bad.
Yeah.
But now I wear my helmet all the time and I'm very proud that I wear it.
Yeah. But it took me 6 months to recover from that because it jammed my jaw up in and my bite was off for 4 months because there's not a lot of blood flow and it takes that long for the inflammation come down. I mean, I went to the dentist and I went to the chiropractor and massage therapist. And so it takes a really long time. And if we can prevent it, let's prevent it.
And I think that's a great point of, you know, for the person listening who has over-exercising tendencies like you and I, right? We don't like to slow down.
Yeah.
Kind of asking yourself, okay, well, would I rather slow down for a week as preventative, or if I keep going at the rate that I'm going, I could have a more serious injury or fracture or whatever it may be. And if I continue down that road, that could be months. It could be years of pain that I'm looking towards correcting and kind of backpedaling.
Yeah. Not to mention that there's the things that sneak in subtly over time. So my dad was a marathon runner. He ran the Boston Marathon. So I come by this craziness, honestly, because he is an obsessive workouter. I mean, he was running 3 to 5 miles a day, 6 days a week until August of last year. He was 68 at the time, and his knee was just shot. And so he had to have a complete knee replacement surgery. Mm-hmm. And so it was subtle. It was a subtle, and he works hard to like do balance and he does core strength and that kind of thing. But, you know, 40 plus years of over-exercising has its consequences. And so that was his consequence. So thank goodness for knee replacement. Of course, he approach the physical therapy like a champ. He's like, my doctor wanted me at 90 degrees and I'm at 120. I'm like, good job, Dad.
Overachiever, huh?
Yeah. He's like, that would be me too. I mean, he's like, he told me to do 10. So I do 10 every day. And he's like very regimented, but he doesn't overdo it. Some people overdo it. We had a friend who had the same thing and she's like, he told me to do 10. So I did 100. And I was like, no, do not do that.
10
like,
for
that
reason.
Is a
reason.
Terrible plan. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a long answer about why we should prevent.
Yeah, I think
injury because it takes a lot of time.
And I think it really all of this boils down to learning to really listen to our bodies and what is our body telling us and what is that feedback? How does that tie into what I'm feeling mentally, emotionally, and putting the pieces together. To take kind of this overall approach. And the more that we can listen to our bodies, the more that we can respect our bodies, you know, our bodies and our brains, the better off we're going to be long term.
Yeah. And knowing the difference between pain and pushing is a big one. And on both ends of the scale. So whether you're the overworkouter and knowing the difference between pain and pushing, or the person who has a pre-existing condition or a diagnosis, because pain is the indicator. So you should not be feeling pain when you're working out. You should be feeling challenged and you should be feeling, you know, that there's a burning feeling of like my muscles have run out of blood and oxygen, but that's different than pain. And that is as athletic trainers, that is our indicator. That's how we know when to stop pushing an athlete and when to keep pushing an athlete. And athletes are very body self-aware. I encourage everybody to have your kids do a couple years of gymnastics because it makes you very body self-aware. And I tell my husband with jokes with me because I'm too self-aware. And I'm too educated. So I'll be like, my biceps tendon is bothering me today. And he's like, can you just say that your elbow is bothering you? Yeah, like, why?
So
you have to like be so specific. I'm constantly reporting to him like, oh, you know what's happening today? And he's like, I don't need to know everything that's going on in your body today. Yeah. I'm like, but it's interesting to me. He's like, no, please don't tell me what's happening. But that body awareness and finding a way to get in touch with what's happening.
Well, this has been so informative and I think such a great reminder for people to feel hopefully empowered by whatever it is that they're going through and not hopeless and knowing that there are professionals like yourself out there who will be in your backyard, who will be in your corner to help advocate for you. But at the end of the day, you've got to be your own advocate and don't be afraid to speak up.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always love to ask this final question because we focus on, positivity here. So what is the best thing that's happened to you this week or last week, considering it's a Monday?
Oh, yeah. I just think the time with my family that this coronavirus has provided, we're just with each other a lot, which has its pluses and its minuses. But I just feel like I've gotten so much closer to all of my kids and my husband, especially having a 14-year-old and 11-year-old girl who kind of might be tempted to be in that phase where they don't really want to talk to their mom anymore, but now they're forced to talk to them. That's been really cool to be able to just deepen those relationships, build that trust. School starts for us next Monday. Arizona's super early. It's super early. We're kind of like on a modified year-round And it's at home school because they're not mm-hmm. going back yet. But I'm just super aware of just this nice 8 weeks that we've had for summer where they didn't have any online school and we're all still kind of home and we can just really enjoy each other. And so I think in some ways it's like an answer to prayer, even though I'm very well aware and we now have friends who have had coronavirus and thankfully survived it. But there's blessings even in the hardship, and that's what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think so many people can probably relate to that right now and choosing to focus on the good because what's the alternative, right?
Right. Yeah. And it can be found. Like I'm generally an optimistic person. Someone is like, let's find that positive thing out of all of this. And every challenge I think builds character and it makes us more ingenuitive. It makes us create things that maybe we wouldn't have created. And then later in life, we're like, how do we ever live without this? But it was birthed out of hardship. So.
That's such a great point. Well, thank you so much, Lisa. If our listeners want to find you, what's the best way to connect with you?
Yeah. So best way to connect with me is probably on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook. And so I have two Instagram handles that I utilize. I'm going to say them and then I'm going to spell them because I haven't gotten to the point in Marketing Impact Academy yet where I've changed my handles. I am not a good student. So I am at polka.mamafitness. So, and I'll spell it. It's polkadotmama fitness. There's a story behind that. I have freckles, and when my daughter was three, I always hated my freckles. My daughter was three. She just out of the blue was like, oh, I'm so lucky to have a polka dot mama. And I was like, I wasn't wearing polka dots at the time. She goes, you know, you got your polka dots all over your body. Not everybody has polka dots and I have a polka dot mama. And I was like, oh my gosh,
yeah. That is the sweetest thing ever.
So she saw them as beautiful and that just completely changed my perspective. So that's my email address, polkadotmama3@gmail.com. I'm polkadotmama3 on Facebook. But then the one that I post the most to my personal, which is laughing_Lisa Collins. And that's also on Instagram.
Well, we will be sure to link to those in the show notes and everything that we talked about, how we can connect with you. And I appreciate your time. It's been such an honor.
Yeah. Thank you, Katie. I'm happy to do this anytime. This was fun for me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook @Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.